Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Nick Amos, and this is Cinnamon Connect. It's great you're able to join us for today for our webinar, where we're going to be looking at current issues facing churches, Christian charities, and offering some practical advice and encouragement to you. And today's subject, we're going to be talking about finding freedom from addiction. Only this week, the subject of addiction had been in the news again, reporting that thousands of children are falling through the cracks due to COVID, staff shortages, and funding cuts. But addiction isn't just an issue for the young. It's affecting all ages and has serious consequences. We'll be talking about what's driving the current rise, what it takes to love someone gripped by addiction, why a holistic approach is so important, and what the church can do right now to respond. And we've got two great speakers lined up for you today, which I'm really excited about. Well, during the pandemic, there has been an unfortunate rise of 27% across the UK in people dying while in treatment for drug and alcohol addiction. Within Scotland, Scotland continues to have by far the highest drug death rate by any country in the whole of Europe, with more than 3.5 times that of England and Wales. During April 2020 and March 2021, 3,700 people died while in contact with drug and alcohol services. That's up by 2,900 over the previous year. That is a significant increase. Out of more than 250,000 people affected, more than half are in treatment for problems with opiates and a quarter with alcohol problems. Changes to support and reduced access to healthcare during lockdowns are likely to have been major factors. UCAT, a group providing residential detox treatment, said a concerning number of services have closed their doors to addicts during the pandemic. Professor Sir Ian Gilmore, chair of the Alcohol Health Alliance UK, said many providers have reported a huge increase in alcohol referrals to their services after the first national lockdown. New analysis of NHS figures shows that the number of older people using addiction services have pulled away from other age groups at an alarming speed. Cannabis remains the most widely used illicit drug, with the number of people aged 55 and over under the care of drug treatment services rising by nearly 800% during the past 15 years. The figure for the over 65s is more than 1,000%. This compares actually to a drop of more than 25% of those aged 18 and 19. So we're seeing a huge increase in those of the older age groups being more affected. But it doesn't stop there. For alcohol, opioids, crack, cocaine, and amphetamines, there's been a drop of more than 25% of the number of 18 to 19-year-olds under addiction services, compared with a rise of more than 200% in the 55 and over group of the same time frame. It is, however, encouraging that the figures suggest that more older people are seeking help, but drug addiction in older people is still flying under the radar. Unless this is seen as a public health crisis, more lives will be needlessly lost to a treatable condition, said Emily Fitch of the Royal College of Psychiatrists. A recent public health study reported a 25% increase in the sale of alcohol in supermarkets and shops during the pandemic, fueling evidence that there was a sharp rise in heavy drinking at home. Behaviours that people have unfortunately learnt have come to be regarded as normal. Keir Grant, who works for Nottingham Alcohol Liaison Service in hospitals and the wider community, said drinking was the lockdown crutch for many as pandemic pressures took hold. What we've seen is people who have been drinking on the cusp, social drinking, but taken to the next level. Isolation, poor mental health has contributed to that. It has tipped them over the edge and created more pandemic drinking problems. We have normalized alcohol in our society in a way that is deeply unhealthy. A lot of other social interactions seem to depend on alcohol being part of it, which is not the norm globally. The question we'll be looking at today is, what, if anything, can churches do to help turn the tide and help those stuck in addiction? Well, it's great to have our two guest speakers with us today. We have Alex Nicol and Ricky McCaddock, who both are from a fantastic Christian charity called Street Connect. Alex has previously led an addiction charity in Inverclyde and comes with a wealth of experience in the addiction field. He's part of Street Connect's strategic leadership team and is responsible for overseeing the development of their project in Greenock, as well as the development and improvement of all operational activities, including systems, monitoring, evaluation, and policy development. And Ricky is the co-founder and chief executive of Street Connect and has been leading the work since 2013. Ricky previously ran an outreach for a church in Ilford and has been involved in similar activities since 2011. He's personally faced challenging times, and this equips him to empathize and understand with those at a deeper level. His God-inspired vision is to see people set free from a variety of life-controlling issues and to empower the local church to reach the lost. Welcome to you both. Fantastic to have you here today.
Thanks, Nick.
How are you both?
Yeah, thank you, Nick.
So I'm really interested to hear kind of what your experience is. You know, you guys are working there right now on the ground, working to help people. We've heard the news reports, the impact of COVID, increase in deaths. What's been your experience over the last 18 months? What kind of things have you seen? Maybe come to you first, Alex.
Yeah, well, Nick, very brief background about me anyway. First of all, I've got kind of a unique perspective in that I'm a professional addiction worker, but I'm also a church pastor as well. Come from a background where, as part of our church in the 90s, Inverclyde was swamped with heroin and young kids were dying everywhere. So we knew we had to do something as the church. And we launched out with God as very much hopeful amateurs, set up a rehab and just went with God to see what we could do because we had to do something. And it's amazing, you know, what motivated amateurs can do. And one of our elders at the moment is one of our first residents in rehab that we set up way back in the 90s. In terms of the problematic substance use today, I think clearly it's been magnified through the lockdown. People are now engaging in services, isolation, loneliness, loss, fear, stress, and a sense of people being cut loose from social norms exacerbates the problem. Prevalence has obviously gone up significantly. Supply availability has been affected as well. People going to usual suppliers who are not there don't get an access, and with the rise on novel psychoactive substances, things like atezolam and finazepam, which are like 16 times stronger than standard Valium, there is a huge risk of people dying and things like that, and problems getting so much worse. And of course, the nation's favourite drug, alcohol, of course. Supermarkets were like a 27% increase in sales for alcohol over the period. The net effect is a magnified sense of loneliness, worthlessness, disconnection, increased suicide, poor mental health, and alcohol and drug dependence, frankly, have been skyrocketing in our experience.
Ricky, have you got anything to add to that?
No, I think Alex really covered that. But the only thing I would say is what we're seeing in Scotland for 3.5 times higher is a lot of the street Valium that Alex mentioned, and it's mixed with things like Epizolam that are actually much stronger. And when people are taking these mixed with alcohol and or heroin and other opiates, it's no wonder we're seeing such high drug death rates in our nation. And there's factories all over Scotland, particularly in the west of Scotland, who are just knocking these up, amateurs, so not actually real tablets. And they're putting all sorts into them, and people on the streets, they don't know what they're getting. They're taking this stuff, and that's kind of, for me, is why we're seeing such high drug death figures across our nation.
It's very sad, very sad. What have you seen in terms of the landscape? How has the landscape of support and funding changed in recent times?
The landscape of funding and stuff like that, I would say, It's a complex issue. I could hold court on this stuff, Nick, so I'm going to try and be brief about it. But historically, money was always taken away from residential rehabs, which were high cost, and put into a quick fix solution through clinical services. By and large, it was seen very much as a behavioural problem. It was adopted as a behavioural problem. It could be a problem that was learned, therefore could be unlearned. Again, the problem, I think, at the heart of it all was man was seen as a biopsychosocial creature, and the whole aspects of spirituality, worth, dignity, purpose, meaning, existentialism, that whole thing was excluded from the argument. So everything became clinical. They became good at doing clinical stuff, but the figures just kept getting worse. In Scotland, treating this primarily, whilst it is a health, primarily a health problem, and it's a health crisis, and we totally accept that, the problem is so much bigger than that. And the problem is professional talking therapies have always been expensive, and typically they were always outsourced to third sectors who were seen as, well-wishers, but something about some sort of amateurs. And the problem with that was that the in terms of the funding and stuff like that, competition crept in. Third sectors weren't working in collaboration with other third sectors. Statutory sectors weren't working together because they were clinical and system-driven. Health services weren't supporting people in addiction services. Addiction services were exclusive, and health services essentially working in silos. So we've seen that happening in terms of the funding. There's an ever-diminishing bucket of money, and organisations are not particularly working together. Mm. But, of course, the beauty of churches is that they're largely self-funded. Mm. And they are amateurs, but if they're altruistic in nature, and if they want to outwork the ministry, Jesus' ministry, it was estimated about 15% of Jesus' ministry was done inside the synagogue, inside the church. Mm. 85% was done outside. And if churches want to fulfill the ministry of Jesus, which we should be wanting to do, then that's where the greatest need is. And churches are ideally placed in these days in which we live, I think.
That's a really helpful backdrop there, Alex. Thank you very much for that. I mean, obviously, it's a very complex issue. I think you shared with me this kind of phrase, every complex problem has a simple solution, and it's wrong. It's not about just fixing what's in front of you. Yes, it's a health crisis, but it's what's behind that, isn't it? It's the person's story, isn't it, behind that that's the lead up to why a person's stuck in addiction now. And like you say, the voluntary sector has got such a key part to play. The church has a key part to play. Maybe tell us more about the role of the voluntary sector in churches. Why should the church undertake this work when there are professional organisations that are there already, already involved?
Well, I think the quote was H.L. Mencken said, I've actually noted here, it says, for every complex problem, there is a solution that is clear, simple, and wrong. And that's the truth of the matter. But why are churches well positioned at this time? Medical interventions are not the complete solution. You mentioned the word holistic earlier on, Nick. Of course, it's holistic. Man is more than just a biopsychosocial creature that you can medicate. And that's been a problem for a long time. We need love, acceptance, dignity, and worth. And it's in a disconnected society. I remember some time ago, I think it was research that was commissioned by the Big Lottery Fund that was about the greatest social ills facing the UK at the moment. And they came up with three, and that was isolation, loss, and loneliness. These are the greatest problems facing communities. And basically, communities are disconnected. You know, a lot of people internalize isolation as loneliness. Some people that are happy and more affluent perhaps internalize it as solitude and like it. But the problem is that we need restored connection. And Johan Hari said, the opposite of addiction is not sobriety. The opposite of addiction is connection. People need to be reconnected again. And we need connection with self, dealing with shame, stigma, and guilt issues. people need connection with others in terms of relationships, family, friends, mainstream society and culture. And ultimately, people need connection with God for where true hope, forgiveness, worth, purpose and meaning are found. And the beauty about churches are, churches by their nature can accept people based not on what they wear, but who they are, their intrinsic worth created in the image of God. I worked in, I don't want to draw the air out of the room, but I worked in secular services, and it was interesting that when they heard that I was a Christian, anytime I was doing group interventions, it wasn't long before someone turned the conversation round to why you believe in God. Nobody was interested in, nobody was interested in solution-focused therapy or rational emotive behaviour therapy. They were interested in why you were a believer in God. And the beauty of the church is, and I had to walk on, I had to walk sensitively and wisely working in secular services, because they frown very much on proselytizing and things like that. But the beauty of the church for a day such as this is that we are unapologetically Christian. We have found that God in our lives makes a difference for purpose, meaning, direction, and hope. And so we can love people back to life. So I think the church is ideally positioned for such a time as this.
I wonder if you could, you know, without naming names, I wonder if you're able to share any kind of life stories of people. I mean, you know, there's obviously usually a big backstory to anybody who is stuck in addiction, and a lot of consequences. You know, there are serious consequences, you know, impacts on the wider family and friends, isn't there? Maybe if you do have something you can share with us, you know, anonymously, or even somebody who's got a story. Yeah.
Alex, can I jump in here?
Certainly.
I was actually interviewing with a local newspaper with someone that we'd helped over the years, and it kind of ties in some of the challenges we've been facing with, you know, for a truly person-centred approach, which all services are claim they're geared towards, but in reality, it doesn't work like that. You know, a person might want residential rehab, but, you know, traditional kind of statutory services and are often trying to hold them and park them on like their methadone because of the fear that if they come down and they relapse, that, you know, that'll exasperate the drug deaths, and which is understandable in some sense. But for a lot of the talk around person-centered approach, there's often quite challenges faced workers, as I'm sure some could probably testify to that today. And one example was a man that we helped in a really deprived area in Glasgow. He'd been in the care system his whole life, on methadone for 30 years, in and out of prison. And he connected with a local church in this community, got baptised, but couldn't really break free from kind of the trauma, the difficulty, all the stuff he had on. When he'd leave that church, he was out. And people were stood there offering him drugs, and it was just hard for him to break free. He lost his partner, who of many years, she had health issues, but it was very much tied to addiction, and it was kind of a breaking point for him. We connected and partnered with this church, and he started engaging in our community recovery program. And it wasn't easy at first. You know, many times he fell into drug-induced psychosis, got sectioned because of the level of street valium and meth and the stuff he was taking. And to look through the natural eyes, you could see why the resistance we were getting these drugs were like, we can't bring him down. And he was just, I want to go to rehab. I want to go to Christian rehab. And they were like, we can't get you down. So he had to take matters into his own hands and would just go and stop getting his methadone. And he would go back to the drugs worker and they still wouldn't reduce him down to the levels he needed, because he needed to get down from 120 mL methadone to 30 off the street Valium. And eventually, through doing this a second time, they said to him, what do you want? And he was like, I've told you for the past 18 months, I want to go to rehab. And eventually they said, right, okay, let's do it. And one of our team had been going with him to his drug meetings with his drug worker often. And it was a difficult time. Long story short, is that he went to rehab, Went and done ministry training with Teen Challenge, came out of there, worked for Teen Challenge, is now married. He got a job in a local GP as a community addiction support worker. He now then went on to work with Salvation Army, and now he works with the Simon Community in Edinburgh, married, completely free from not just his addiction of 30-odd years, but he's such a lovely guy when you get to meet him. His story will probably be in the papers soon because they're looking to publish it. But he's married, and now he's offering hope and support where he's been free for 5 years, and now he's been working full-time in homelessness addiction services for 3 to 4 years. But the last 3 years. And God's done a marvellous work in his life. And that was because he chose to put his faith in God, pursued the goal that he wanted to, and with many barriers in the way, he finally got there. So the kind of gist of that is the reality is it isn't easy. It's a long journey sometimes. But I do see a shift in the way that services are approaching this. And there's much more collaboration. There's funding pushed back towards residential rehab. There's a lot of money going into trying to tackle this, but we just need to see a more joint-up approach. And we, like Alex says, really believe the church and Christian organisations. It's our Esther moment for such a time as this. God's raising us up to tackle this epidemic across our nation.
Ricky, that's great. Really keen to understand a bit more about the work of Street Connect. Ricky, I wonder if I could come to you. You've got a story to share about your own life and how you became involved in this work. I'd love to hear it. You may be happy to share that with everybody.
I didn't grow up in a Christian home. I grew up in a single parent home in a kind of, you know, standard housing scheme, and ended up by the age of 13 becoming insecure and finding answer in alcohol and then drugs. And by the age of 18, I'd tried every drink and drug you could think of, ended up getting in trouble with the police. So I'd moving around a lot. I went over to Dubai, different towns and cities around Scotland, and ended up in prison, ended up on heroin and Valium, diazepam, and I was addicted heavily to these, and my life was very chaotic. And I met someone who'd done a Christian rehab program called Teen Challenge. And so about 15 years ago this time, my life was still in a mess. I went down there in 2007. That's where I came to faith. Didn't all go plain sailing initially. Ended up having a bit of a relapse. Was in a mess down in London where I was living for a while. Was in homeless accommodation and ended up on crack cocaine and heroin and methadone and things down there, until came to a place where, you know, I was still engaging in the church because I knew that my answer and my freedom was going to be found in Christ. And I continued to pursue that till I came to a place one day where I just came to the end of myself and I said to God, I can't do this anymore. I'll do whatever it takes. And I went back to Teen Challenge. And since then, that's where I've found my true freedom. Ended up going on and doing ministry training, similar like what you heard with Charlie's story in a sense. But then I went back down to London for the church that helped me. And I started an outreach for the church there. Got married, moved up to Glasgow, and a pastor was looking to do something in Glasgow City Centre, and that's where the work of Street Connect began back in 2013.
It's amazing. It's interesting, isn't it, to hear the story that, you know, just because you've signed up, you know, become a Christian, everything's not just fixed there and then. You know, there's your journey. That's just the beginning of the journey, isn't it? Just amazing to hear your story of that journey through to freedom. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more then. What does Street Connect do? What are you actually doing, guys?
Yeah. So our service model was developed over, in the early days, we began as a church outreach, just reaching into the city where the church was right in the centre of Glasgow, where there was a lot of homelessness and addiction. And it was reaching out to there initially through a drop-in and street outreach. And then we developed a model of support where realising that's about making the connection. So it's about going out into the community where people are, following Jesus' example and not waiting for people to come to us, because the reality is they're not these days. We have to go where they are and meet them in their territory. So that's what street outreach and the drop-in cafes is about building connection and relationship. as Alex pointed out. And then we've got our next stage of support is about either community or residential rehab, because not everyone can do it in the community and not everyone wants to go to rehab. So we have our community recovery program is centered around a recovery groups and a recovery program with intensive one-to-one support, where we do a recovery plan and look at the aspirations and help people work towards the desired destination. And we also help prepare people for residential rehab. We work with a number of Christian rehabs all around the UK. So it's working with the person where they want to get to, and we support that. We also run our own aftercare program, and we have some flats. So we have 5 bed spaces at the minute in Glasgow for people resettling back into the community, primarily after residential rehab. It's often a difficult transition, and people often relapse there, and you know that highly contributes to the high drug death figures we're seeing as well. So it's about helping people transition back into community, because as you've just said, Nick, it's, you know, you become a Christian and you get off the drugs initially, and that isn't the end of the story. It's often the beginning. And it's dealing with the trauma, the heart, the pain, underlying challenges. And often as people have to start looking after themselves, you know, in their own accommodation, that can be quite daunting. So we provide some flats with kind of lower level support as people make that transition.
Yeah, yeah. Where I am, we have I actually chair for a local charity in my town. And a number of years ago, we'd opened a residential drug and alcohol centre, 6 months residential, followed with move on accommodation. And it's a long process, isn't it? The guys come out, they move into the move on accommodation, but it could be, you know, a year or so before they begin to do, you know, actually look at working. There's restoration of relationships with family. There's an ongoing connection with local church. You know, as volunteering, connection on Sundays, connection with kind of other community activities. There's a lot to be done, but it does take time, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It's a long process, and that's part of what we do. Is we're there, we're journey with people. You know, there's often relapse and difficulties along the way, and we just let people know we're there for them. You know, there is times where we've had to ban people from certain parts of certain services because of behavioural issues, or thinking about, you know, the bigger picture and everyone engaged in a group. If someone's relapsing or using or even trying to sell drugs at one of the groups, or which, you know, can happen at times. So there is times where we need to make tough calls, but we do let them know we're there for you. If you're willing to let go and change some of these behaviours, we will support you towards where you want to get to. So, yeah. But yeah, it's about being there for and journeying with people.
Yeah, yeah, really good. I was offering support to a couple of guys who are part of our church, and both of which I was encouraging to get into residential rehab. One actually did go in. They lasted 2 days and they just couldn't cope. They couldn't cope, you know, it's too strict. And they kind of walked out. Then they felt really bad because they'd like lost an opportunity. But, you know, we continue to support them, you know, linking them in with regular gets togethers, coffee and so on. And like I say, it doesn't always work. People aren't always ready, are they, for residential?
No, they're not. And often it's multiple times of this and realising, you know, actually maybe it wasn't the right place, or there's different types of programmes with different entry requirements and it'll suit different people. And that's what good preparation is key. You know, I was in a meeting with a rehab provider recently, and we're just chatting about the importance of good preparation and letting people know what the programme entails. And that's part of the support that we are working on is helping prepare people well, churches and volunteers and staff, to actually ensure that, you know, they're preparing people and helping them access the right rehab for them, their personality type, where they're at. And, you know, there's multiple factors to that.
Yeah. Now, your work isn't just in Glasgow, though, is it? What have you been doing to help replicate your success across the UK and other places?
Yeah. So, yeah, as we began in Glasgow City Centre, we quickly realised that we had a model that could be replicated, and we wanted to see churches supported towards impacting their communities and seeing lives transformed. So we partnered in 2017. We began partnering with 2 churches in deprived areas of Glasgow. And then we expanded further afield to some of the surrounding towns. And then we did a pilot in 2018 in Deal in Kent. We partnered with a church there, ran that for 2 years, which was really successful and made significant impact. But what we'd recognised is that we had a lot of things we needed to sort out to do this effectively and do it well. So we went on an accelerator programme with a group called Creo, and then followed on by the work with Cinnamon, who we've been working with for the past 15 months. So we're working in 9 locations at present, all currently in the west of Scotland, within maybe 45 minutes drive of Glasgow. But we have plans to bring on quite a few more partners across the year ahead, and we're looking at further afield. So we've got 3 levels that partners can join, depending on the level of support they're needing and we're able to give them.
Very good. Now, churches, there might be people here today thinking, actually, you know what, we're looking at, we think we need to partner, but, either don't know where to start or maybe think they don't have the necessary experience required, you know, may not have a life story. What would you say to them?
So I'll take the first part first, is that churches that often come to us, there's normally 2 phases. One where they want to do something and they're not quite sure. So that's where we'll support them to start with, around street outreach and drop-in, to start building relationships and connecting to their community. Some churches come where they've made the connection and they've got a number of people in addiction that they're looking to help move forward but are struggling to do that. So that's where we can support them at the next stage, where it's, you know, working with them and training them to do recovery groups, how to do key working, one-to-one support, and how to do rehab referrals well, and how to prepare people for rehab. And answering the question, no, you don't have to have lived experience. I mean, we've got a lot of our staff team. We've got currently 22 paid staff, and we've got about 80 volunteers across our different projects. And, you know, we have quite a few of our frontline team that have lived experience, but have a lot that don't. And a lot of that same with volunteers, more don't. You know, our first question I would say is, can you love people? And I know the church is great at that. Historically, that's what we do. And we can love people. We can train you. You know, if people have the heart and the desire to do this, because we often, you know, one guy, one of the early people we helped, he came into the drop-in at Glasgow City Church. And one of the things he shared in his testimony, he says he came to faith in a ball of snot and tears up the back of the church. And he says he couldn't remember a time when he'd been loved like he had been there, loved and accepted. And as Alex pointed out, you know, people feel their worth. They feel they aren't just a number. It's not just a service, that it's actually they're cared for and they're part of something greater and bigger and have a purpose and meaning for their lives. So yeah, if you've not had lived experience, we train. We've got quite intensive training that Alex has developed, and we're currently in the process of improving. And yeah, we can support churches to do that. So yeah, if you've not been in addiction or anything, please don't be discouraged, because you can be effective. I mean, Alex hasn't been, and Alex is great at what he does. Mm.
Okay, so how what would you say then? Church thinking about getting started. Where do you begin?
Sorry, could you say that again?
Yeah, so a church thinking about getting started, might be somebody here actually don't maybe know what the problems, what's going on in their local area. You know, where do you begin with this in terms of, you know, what would you say is the basic process before saying, hey, let's start something? Where would you begin?
Yeah, so I guess it's first, you know, obviously in your community, if you're seeing there's a need and there's a lot of addiction in your community, then what do you do? You know, so if you're looking to connect, that's where I would, for us, it's been very effective doing street outreach and running a drop-in. But I think you also need to do a check of what is going on in the area. Can you connect to that? Or if you see there's such a big gap in provision that actually we need to do something, then for us, it's about the first stage is making those connections. And we've seen such fruit from getting out onto the streets. We have seen, and then, you know, that's the first step, and then running a drop-in. And many of the churches that, you know, didn't have anything going initially have now got thriving outreaches up and running. And then it's about the next step. So if you've maybe already got the connections, then, you know, I know there's a lot of places struggle and think, how do we actually move people meaningfully forward? And that's where, you know, I know there's other providers and things as well, but we have a community recovery program and we train people how to do one-to-one support and or befriending. You know, and I know some people might not feel confident in doing that, but there's other areas you can get engaged, whether that's serving tea and coffee, and you know, it might not be the outreach as such, but that's kind of our approach, is then helping the person to identify as community recovery, or do they need residential? Because in our experience, a lot of people think they don't want to go to rehab, they want to do it in the community, but often find they can't because of the multiple barriers they're faced in and around where they live. And it's just helping support people to help them realise what the best opportunity is for them. So, yeah, that's kind of how Street Connect does that.
That's great.
Let's go straight to the questions so that we don't lose too much time. I noted Tony Jones remarked that there was a Black report about rehab funding. Ricky has answered that one. Do you want to add anything more to that, Ricky, about funding in rehab?
Yeah, happy to add a little bit more on that. So yeah, there has been, you know, we accessed some Scottish Government funding, and a large pool of the 250 million that's been made available for Scotland over the next 5 years is pushed towards rehab, residential rehab. I know that, as Alex pointed out earlier, there was a pull away from rehab a number of years ago and a push towards community recovery. I think there's a recognition that they made a mistake there. And it's not either or, it's both and. You need both, because people, you know, have different situations and circumstances, and therefore what works for one might not be for another, but you do need both. And I know the UK is the same. I know, you know, some of you might have saw the latest strategy or heard Boris Johnson on the news recently in December speaking about their new strategy. And they've got a large push towards increasing funding for bed spaces. And one thing I will say is there's often we have to go into meetings with government or local authorities, and when they chat faith-based approach, you kind of have to be, yes, but we're open to all, and you know, but I see there's a bit of a turn in the tide at the minute, in that there's a much more openness towards a faith-based approach and a recognition of the key part that Christian providers are playing in providing bed spaces around the UK. So I think there were surveys done, and they wrote a report, and I seen the one for Scotland, and the amount of bed spaces that are actually Christian was quite significant. And I think it must have opened their eyes to realise, well, wait a minute, you know, the church and Christian organisations are playing a key role in bringing these death figures down. So that's quite exciting for me. And I just feel we've got a real ambassadorial role to show that actually a faith-based approach to recovery is well sought after, and is very, very effective.
Okay, Tina Stevens asks about support for mums of addicts. Are there support groups?
Alex, do you want to come in on this one?
Yeah. In terms of family support, it's a big issue. There's obviously specific family organisations about the nation and stuff like that, secularly, but very limited in terms of the church. We are actually piloting at the moment a whole programme around supporting families, people affected by and people affected by a loved one's substance use, and we're hoping to roll that out wider across the Street Connect organisation. And basically in that it will be combinations of group and individual support issues, training and teaching people effective ways to deal with a loved one's substance use rather than just screaming at them and stuff like that. So that's what we're developing this at the moment, based on the CRAFT system. It's called Community Reinforcement and Family Therapy, but from a Christian perspective and operated obviously out of the church. So we're really excited about what we're doing and that work, and all being well, we'll be rolling that out to interested partners.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant.
Right. Are you open to people expressing their interest in that, Alex, and getting their name down if they'd like to know more, or maybe even journey with you to help develop it?
More than happy to get names or to open the dialogue between anybody that's interested in that. Happy to do that, Nick, yes.
Right.
Okay, there's another question about retaining, finding and retaining volunteers during the COVID pandemic. Was that an, did that affect anything?
Ricky, you answer that one. Did you have issues with volunteers due to pandemic?
Sorry, say that again, Nick.
Did you have issues with volunteer availability during the pandemic? How did you cope?
Yeah, we did lose a lot of volunteers because of the nature of, you know, a lot of the restrictions in place. So we did keep a lot of our volunteers going, and our staff team, you know, we didn't close throughout the whole pandemic. We had our frontline staff team, and we did have a core pool of volunteers, albeit there were less, but because there was less people out and about, we were able to cope with that. And as we're looking at more and more church partnerships and drawing from the pool of volunteers in the local areas where each partnership is operating. So we're just seeing a good uptake in volunteers.
Very good.
Okay. And Kate Sharma has noted that we will be sending out notes following the webinars with contact details for the Street Connect team. So if you have any further questions, you'll be able to contact them direct.
If you have further questions, you want to continue this discussion, then you'll be able to do that by joining our Cinema Connect learning community. We have a close Facebook group. You can join and you can carry on this conversation. You can ping the questions into there. You can get in touch with us and you can email team@cinemanetwork.co.uk. To connect with us. If you wanted to get a bit more advice in your local situation, then you can also tap into our team of church advisors who are on hand to help advise what you might do next. And also, of course, you have freedom to connect. We'll connect you in with Street Connect with Alex and Ricky, which I'm going to just bring back now. I'd like to just hear from them. Maybe you could share if you've got a particular, you know, gem or a piece that you were talking about in your group, love it to hear. If you could share that with everybody, that'd be absolutely fantastic. Alex, how did you get on in your group? What kind of things were you talking about? Are you going to be able to share a few things with us?
What struck me in my group, Nick, is the commonality of the questions with what the very questions that we've answered, so that we've dealt with so often in our experience as an organisation at Street Connect and as a local church as well. The issues are common across all the organisations, how you deal with people in such situations. And it was really, really encouraging to realise that, that, you know, we're all just, in one sense, we're just people trying to help people, and we're not experts as such. We're on a learning journey. I'm on a learning journey. Ricky's on a learning journey. Everyone's on a learning journey. But you know what? We're making a difference and making an impact, and it's great to hear people in the group that just that love, that Christian love that wanted to express itself in action, I thought was beautiful. And it was just an overriding theme in all the questions that the team were raising there. So thank you to the team in my group. Really appreciated that.
Ricky, how'd you get on yours?
Yeah, it was really interesting conversations, and just seeing the variety and different levels of experience within people. But the heart, as Alex has pointed out, and one thing we were chatting in our group was just about the challenges of people in and out of prison, and just like, you know, people falling by the wayside and relapsing, and just the need to be there to help pick people back up, to know that they're not, it's not just a service, that we're there and we can love them. And I think that's what the church does so well. It shows a different type of love and a kind of a never give up attitude on people, you know, that we're there for you and we'll continue to be there for you. Another kind of key theme we touched on was groups. You know, we had someone from the recovery course and Keys Detox on, which are two great projects as well. And we're just sharing about online and in-person groups and the difference, which I guess we can also relate to church. You know, you can reach a new audience online and people might join in a way that they wouldn't feel comfortable in person, but you can't replace in person. And getting into the nitty-gritty and the depths of rubbing shoulders with people, and actually it's in the more informal moments that a lot of the learning and growth occurs, you know, in the discussions before and after the groups and how important that actually is. But the beauty of online is that it's more accessible to people in remote locations and who might not be able to access the level of services that are available in our cities and towns. So I think there's a beauty of it's not either or, it's having both and that being a stepping stone, hopefully, into deeper engagement. I think it's a lot about sowing seeds in this work, and that sometimes we just don't know something you see, how God can use that, the Holy Spirit can use something, and outwardly to us, it might look like it's not going in or there's not being received well. But actually, you know, sometimes that seed takes a long time to bear the fruit and just continuing to be there for people working through that.
Really useful. And I think, you know, you're right. I mean, the online isn't a replacement for the face-to-face, but it gives a new ability, doesn't it, to, I think I heard the phrase last week and I can't remember it. It's something like, there's a phrase for this where basically because people are online, they feel safer and there's a reduced inhibition. But that means they can come anonymously. They can disconnect anytime they like. They can keep their video off. They can say something or not say something. So it's a really safe way for people to kind of come into a group and connect before committing to come along in person. And that's a really useful way. And I think it'd be great to see more online groups, like you say, because we've moved so far forward in such a short space of time with online services like today, like the webinar. You know, we didn't run webinars before the pandemic started. And now, look, everybody runs webinars to offer support and help. So it's amazing. Well, we're going to shortly come to an end for today. Some things we've got coming up. Next week, we have some training. You may not know this, but Cinnamon has a range of training courses, which are all designed to help churches and charities looking to run social action projects. So the kind of courses we run, next week's is going to be on managing change. And that's all about how to share your vision effectively, techniques for supporting stakeholders, practical tools for managing change and controlling the pace of change. So that's a flavor of the course. We run other courses like building effective partnerships, the volunteer journey, missional listening. So it's a lot of core skills for churches and charities. Now that course, the courses are very inexpensive. The course is £25 per person. But if you join our Cinnamon Connect membership, Cinnamon Connect Plus at £10 a month, you can access 5 free courses a year as part of your membership. And as well as getting access to all of the other amazing benefits that we offer. So if you want to get along to that, pop along to cinnamonconnect.co.uk/events. You'll find details of all of our training and our upcoming webinars there, and you'll be able to book yourself on without any difficulty. As we come to a close, I would ask if you would kindly give us just 30 seconds of your time to give us some feedback on what you thought of today. We'd love to hear what you got out of it. And if you fill in the poll questionnaire, we would really value that. We'd also love to hear from you. If you've got ideas and suggestions of things that you'd like to hear about going forward or ways in which we could support you, do feel free to connect with us afterwards. We will be emailing out links to the recording and to the notes. You can simply reply to the email and give us your feedback. Or give us your comments or questions on email as well. So thank you very much. Thank you very much to our speakers today. It's been absolutely fantastic to have them with us. Thank you to you for your amazing contributions to today. And we really look forward to connecting with you again very soon. So all the best from myself, David, and Kate here at Cinnamon, and have a great day.